Scale 101.
Galactic Master of Ceremony here to present you the first cinematic action-packed audio comic. This cosmic transmission will show you the reality of the draconian reptilian regime, the tyrannical government, the Anunnaki, and the Great Awakening. Sit back and relax and listen to this prophetic story about the fate of humanity being subjected to a mystical occult book that has the secrets of the universe and the esoteric truth is in the hands of Bedel while the elites are trying to stagnate spiritual evolution. Enjoy.
Experience a radically different audiobook.
The Tome of the Makaria.
It's finally here. Join us as we take you on an adventure
to new worlds.
Bedel Graphic Audio Series, the first of its kind. Learn about what's to come. Guided by the teachings of Bedel 1014. Full cast. Cinematic music.
Sound effects.
We're here to wake you up. Pre-order your series and get a chance to win a free The Tome of Makaria, first issue t-shirts. This is the audiobook that will galvanize you.
The Tome of the Makaria.
You're listening to Planet X Audio Graphics.
For a time, we lived in harmony, but others strive to take that away from us. Now the time is here for us to come back together again. The glass is almost empty.
A Rydell Rice Bay story, The Tome of Makaria, first issue.
Time check, 10:14 a.m. on a Wednesday morning. As Bedel sits in his bedroom next to his computer, preparing to go live once again with another interesting topic for his online listeners, he began highlighting the importance and sense of purpose of being one of the chosen ones.
Yo, it's your boy Bedel. Today I'm going to be breaking down the dynamic principles of what it means to be a chosen one. To be chosen, you have to deviate from the three-dimensional frequencies. Everything is based on a psychological egregore, meaning that it creates behavior modification until it puts you into an alignment to a dark psychology external stimulus, which is to learn the behavioral patterns in the brain. Right? Okay, listen, let me be straight with you. Many people don't realize that when you are considered to be a chosen factor, a lot of things you want in this life, whether it be a relationship with a certain person, a job you really want, friends, or anything that's basically connected to external gratification, it never works out for you because you are divinely protected. A lot of times the universe will vehemently protect you from people, places, and possessions that will take you away from your divine path. That rejection was merely a redirection to course correction to your purposeful journey. Be thankful that that relationship didn't work out. Be thankful that you fell out with friends. Be thankful that your family doesn't communicate with you that way. That they used to because of your... What was that?
Bedel slightly jumps as his heart begins racing.
Is somebody here?
He whispers to himself.
Nobody knows this place.
He quickly turns around and notices that his bedroom door is wide open. He turns off the computer and slowly rises up to his feet when suddenly he hears a knock at the door from downstairs. He has an uneasy feeling from his gut. He rushes over, grabbing his book bag that was hanging against the wall near the closet door, then quickly stashes some of his important things to take with him, along with his laptop that was sitting on top of his desk. As a result of the Luciferian conspiracy and the many other discussions based upon his teachings, Dale knew not to take any chances. Just before he was able to get his backpack properly attached, he hears,
"FBI, open up!"
With about 15 armed officers and ready for some action, the law enforcement agents crash into the house and rampage in search of any prospects. They scatter throughout the house in the downstairs area.
"They're making their way up. I gotta get the hell out of here."
While kneeling, Bedell decided to peek from out of his bedroom door. Then he heard a slight muffled conversation at the door. He knew trouble was about to follow, looking from his room down to the bottom of the stairs. He noticed movements throughout the house with shadows following. One agent froze in his actions, collecting his flying eyes. He then looks upstairs while pointing at another officer to follow. Bedell then quickly but with ease closed the door in hopes that no one can hear him as he runs over to the window, using it as a route to escape. Bedell planned for this for a while, but never knew that this day would be the day. There was a wire wrapped around a wooden pole attached to the outer skirts of the window frame. This was his way out.
"Here goes everything."
Minutes after, within Bedell's bedroom.
"Hey, Jane, right? Wow, what a mess we have here. Let me introduce myself."
He reaches to her, extending his hand for her to shake.
"Mike McCoy."
She returned his grip with an equal strength as they locked eyes.
"Yeah, I know who you are. What are you doing here?"
"I understand we have an infestation, and we need to get rid of it quickly. I see you didn't get the memo from higher up. I'll be taking over now. I'm afraid it's been done."
"No way. I know they did not do this to me."
Agent McCoy was indifferent to Jane's expected unprofessionalism. His many years of experience within the field prepared him for her response to his presence. She'd been in a pit before.
"Well then, how do you want to do this?"
"Thank you, Agent Jane. Go with Scott. He will fill you in on all of the details."
"Jane, please come with me. I'll get you up to date."
Wait.
"This place is pretty widespread. Let's move with purpose, guys. Check in the other rooms."
Each bedroom was unoccupied as the troops moved throughout. McCoy turned and started walking back towards the door, where Jane was escorted from out of. By looking, if he judged her from her appearance, in her personal bias, he would have guessed that she was more than a sophisticated model. McCoy sniffed, then rubbed his nose, squinched his eyes while looking over at Bedell's computer. He walks over and slowly looks around, to his right, then to his left. Placing one hand on top of Bedell's game chair, he noticed a mosquito flying by and quickly lifts his hand like a reptile to his prey and snatches it from out of the air, holding it between his index finger and thumb. The blood from the dead mosquito is more than enough evidence to solidify Bedell as their prime suspect.
"Barry, make sure we get this place combed."
"We're in scanning. It was him. Bedell 1014. Disabling societal protocols. Pursuing file data. It's done."
"Good. Mask on before anyone notices, and let's quickly move out."
He said mask, but what he meant was a human cloak antion for easy breathing.
"Let's get what we need and get out of here."
Elsewhere.
"Makita, are you home?"
"Yeah, just got home from school. What's good?"
"They found me."
"Wait, who found you?"
"CIA, the FBI."
"Are you serious?"
"I don't know, one of them. I had to get the hell out of there."
"Are you serious, B? Wow, that's crazy. Where are you now?"
"I'm in an Uber right now."
"I know I'm gonna regret this, but how far are you from my place?"
"Hey, I'm not coming over. I'm not going to bring you into this."
"I don't know if you noticed it or not, but you brought me into this the moment you called me. And keep this in mind. We've been friends since the 9th grade. Do you really think I'm gonna let my best friend take a hit like this? I got your back. Always have, always will."
"You didn't have to make it more complicated than what it is by saying that. But all right, I get it. I'm not too far from your spot. I'm ditching this line. I think you should do the same."
"Okay."
"Leave the back door unlocked. I'll be there in 5.
"Okay, I'll do that."
They immediately cut the call and Bedell threw his phone out of the back window of the car to avoid being tracked down.
Meanwhile,
a kettle of tea is removed from the stove as a herbal blend is poured into a mug and placed upon the table. Bedell and Makita continues their conversation.
"I can't even stand hearing this, and you know it. What are you going to do?
I think you're making a big mistake, B-Dale.
Are you kidding me? I can recall a time that you hated the idea of me informing people about the truth.
Makita leans back in her molded executive chair, stretched, resting her feet upon the table.
The truth? Really? It wasn't so much about the truth that I was hating on, so you claim. It was your presentation. I never wanted you to get on that damn social media pushing your agenda.
I don't need to hear this right now. Hey, this is ridiculous. Do you really think I want to die for this? Only because I've gone beyond the permitted zones, pushed the envelope, lifted the veil?
Standing with his tea in his hand, Bidel paced around the room, trying to keep everything in check. However, he's overcome with anxiety.
I'm screwed, no matter how I look at it. If I keep quiet and don't say anything, my soul will cry out. I'll feel totally responsible for not saying a damn thing. And on the other hand, this is what I get for opening my big mouth. I don't know. I just need help figuring this out. I don't want to talk no more. Either you're going to help me or not. I can't do this alone, and you know it.
I don't know. You're talking nonsense, B, and you know it. I told you. I will always have your back. And I know you're shook up at the moment. I get it. But where's the B-Dale I remember? He doesn't talk like this. He never did. The B-Dale I know is a go-getter. He makes things happen. And he takes responsibility for his actions. You've done a lot of good for people. You have an army now. You just need to focus. And I'm not taking anything less than B-Dale. So get it together. They need you. I need you. And besides, it's not like you didn't know this was going to happen. Because you did.
B-Dale turned around, back at Makita, with a smirk on his face, nodding his head.
You're right. I guess I didn't want to believe that. That it would come to this so soon. Realizing that I was so close to death really had me for a second.
Yeah, I know you were scared. Just tell me one thing. That you will not quit fighting. You just have to keep moving. Tens of thousands of people are relying on you. They need you.
Sorry about this. All of this. Here, take this.
He pulls out a phone for her to keep, then slides it over to her.
I can't stay here too long. Keep in touch.
Oh, okay. I know you told me not to bring this up again, but what about the book?
Hey, now is not the time.
We have to make the time. Anything can happen. And besides, you trust me, right?
You know I do.
Okay then. Then trust me. Give me the full story. I want to know everything.
Like I told you before, in some majestic way he comes to me. I can be anywhere. He knows how to find me.
Bidel walks back towards the desk, removing Makita's feet from off of the table, and he places his empty mug on the tabletop.
I'm not going to say it again, so listen up. It was about 2 years back. You remember Mika?
Yeah, I remembered her. I told you to stay away from her.
After we called it quits, or should I say when I called it quits, I found myself sitting in a bar collecting my thoughts. I was definitely confused, but yet maintainable.
Bidel continued the story, this time in details. He was sitting in a bar, pondering over his relationship matters. The bartender slowly pours him a drink.
When I raised my glass, I overheard a conversation concerning a book. I looked over and noticed a bald-headed old man with his hands resting underneath the table.
You know why we're here? Don't make this any harder than what it is, York.
The old man stood up, and what was noticeable was that he was dressed in a long off-white jacket with a book in his hand. He stood up casually. Then others from afar stood up as well. I felt that something was about to go down and felt the need to take cover immediately.
I was sent to get that book, and we are not leaving until it is in our possession. And maybe, just maybe, we can get you to join us.
Ha! You look like them, but you can never be them.
The agent can see the old man as he grins.
Yeah, I told Jane I wasn't crazy about the odds myself. And so here we are. You know me, I'm all about the risk.
The old man stepped back slowly and cautiously.
Tell me, do you still play by your weird little rules? And did this planet finally vex your soul to the point where you're just another psycho in a mask like we are?
I will never be like you.
The old man cut his eyes in Bidel's direction.
I was terrified not knowing what was coming next. In one swift move, the old man pulled out his sword from under his long jacket. The agents began firing, bop, bop, bop. He held his sword, swinging it in a way that protected his face and his body. gunshots were released, the bullet stood motionless in midair from the ricochet, then dropped to the ground one after another. I glanced back and found no sign of the old man. Makita, I tell you, I felt like I was caught between two worlds. And ever since then, my life has never been the same.
I can recall you saying something about a car or...
Yeah, after I hid behind the bar, I felt my only chance in getting out of there, away from those agents, was to make my way to the back door. I took no chances getting out of that place. I jumped in my car and was gone. Ever since, I never looked back. It was when I got home, I realized that my backpack that I had lying underneath my jacket in the back seat had more weight than before.
And that's when you realized you had the book, right?
Yep. Now that was crazy. I'm still trying to figure out how he did it.
Really? You're really going to try to figure out how this old man, who was able to ricochet bullets from his sword, suspend bullets in mid-air, disappear right in front of your eyes, and to top it off, break into your car, leaving a book in your bag without a trace of evidence, and you're trying to figure it all out? Either you're crazy, which I know you're not, or what you've been teaching holds a lot of weight.
Yep, a lot of weight. And as far as crazy goes, maybe I am. Normal people work a 9-to-5. Normal people take out high interest loans they can't afford. Normal people buy cookie cutter cars and live in cookie cutter houses so they can enslave themselves to the perceptions of people they don't like. So yeah, maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm over the top with all this. Crazy people take chances, and the chances are, I think he may be an Anaki or something. I'm not going to deny, it definitely got me thinking even more, and I believe he wants to tell me something. But I just can't seem to galvanize the information properly. But I'm not going to stop until I find out exactly why I'm being summoned. Makita, it's not over. I'll find out why.
Where's the book now?
Right here, in my bag.
Good. Let's get you out of here. I have an Airbnb account. Let me get you a place, then we...
No. No worries. Like you said, I have an army out there. I'll reach out.
They will be coming. You do know this. I'm here. So if you need me to hold down the book, I gotcha.
Bidel looked at Makita, perplexed. Bidel walked over to the door from which he came. His stomach tingled. He had a glassy feeling that pulled at him. Something told him to flee, but he didn't want to leave his friend. Bidel then forced himself out the door.
I don't feel good about this.
Go. Get your ass out of here. Go. We'll keep in touch.
Bidel ran out to the streets and made his way towards the next destination. Makita looked on until she was unable to see him in sight. She closed the door, then turned her back, resting it against the mid-lining of the door. She quickly reaches into her pocket and takes out the phone she was given and places it on a corner top beside her.
You can come out now.
The door in the far corner of the room slowly opened. Footsteps crept closer towards Makita as she stands patiently.
He's given me the full rundown. He's been visited as well. And he has the book.
Everything is on schedule. Tell them that we found 1014 and book.
Makita stared at the agent with a dead look in her eyes after giving the message. She walked closer to the window.
What are we going to do with the girl?
Get rid of her. She has nothing to live for.
The Makita you thought was not, no doubt, but a shapeshifter. The real Makita has been abducted by agents and replaced by a lizard-like creature. The other agent unfolded his arms as he walked closer. Reptilian Conrad. Now, fully transformed, she spreads her web-like hands in front of her face, extending her claws.
Does it hurt the change?
It tends to, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But we still do it all the time. We have a lock on him as we speak. He won't get too far.
Elsewhere. Time check. 8:34 p.m. For miles, Bidel took it easy, pacing himself and not cutting too many corners. But then he knew he had to hurry to get to his destination. He felt things could turn for the worse if he didn't get there fast. He started running again. This time, it was different. He was in a zone now. Every light pole, Every tree, every sign was in its complete detail as he chose exactly where to place his feet. He jumped over bushes, using branches as shortcuts, and clears an open path to the city. Two drones flew above, trailing behind, tracking his every move. One of the drones was visible. Bedell was able to see both and kept running.
I know this thing's not following me,
he thought to himself. It was more than 100 feet above, 70 feet, 40 feet. Then it began firing shots. He moved across the street, ducking in and out of traffic as cars slammed on brakes and swerving from the crossfire of those drones. The shots forced him towards an abandoned building, but the doors was locked.
Come on, open! Open!
In frustration, he kicked the door. Bedell did not take any chance in looking back. He ran up a flight of stairs, knocking over anything and everything that got in his way. He started to hear music. When he reached the third floor, he turned to the right. The music was coming from two rooms down on the left side. As he got closer, he could hear the music getting louder and louder from inside. It sounded like a party.
I gotta get out of here.
He was about to turn back around, but just then when he was about to make that turn, he heard a distinct click of a shell being chambered.
Son of a...
They purposely drove Bedell into this direction, knowing that he would be set up. Using the music to cover their actions, he turns towards the agents and started to count how many he would have to fight off. Realizing he was outnumbered and outgunned, Bedell didn't care at all at this point. He was tired of running, and besides, he has grown accustomed to knowing that the odds are stacked against him. With his hands slightly raised, Bedell moved the gun from out of his face, twisting to his left and pushing with much force. The agent fell backwards, smashing the door wide open, crashing, creating an exit for Bedell to escape. A moment later, all hell broke loose as the guns inside the old abandoned apartment riddled the walls with their bullets. The four drones came rushing in. First shots rang out and bullet holes tore up the walls once again. Bedell ran to the end of the hall, then turned and ran into another doorway. He just knew that if he didn't find a window or something, it would be the end. Running and dodging, as he kept his head covered, glass from the windows and old picture frames were shattered everywhere. Then suddenly, Bedell went down as he collapsed from an explosion, as one of the missing bullets targeted and fired upon a gas pipe from out of the room he just exited from. Bedell's eyes rolled back into his head. Particles from the wooden debris and ashes were everywhere, covering him, making it difficult for him to move.
Gotta get up. Get up.
When looking back, Bedell noticed most of the agent's bodies were burned and were stuck to the walls from the blast. He pushed himself off of the floor, looking for a target of opportunity, but there was none. These guys meant business, and they wasn't gonna let him go so easy. From out of the flaming fire, the agents realized Bedell had nowhere to run. He's pinned against the wall. He turned towards the agents with his fearing eyes.
Look, if I did something illegal, just arrest me. What the hell are you doing? What is this about?
Six agents stood in silence, without saying a word, pointing their guns directly at Bedell. Then suddenly, from out of nowhere.
I can't even leave you guys here for 10 minutes before driving into some action.
Mr. McCurry walks from between two agents that stood waiting for their next command.
1014, we finally meet.
Who are you guys? And what the hell do you want with me?
Just before McCourt was able to speak.
Yes.
I want to report on Bedell, 1014. Did you get the book?
1014 is in arm's reach as we speak. I have my squad on it. We will have the book within seconds, my lord.
My lord? Wait, you guys are not the real feds? You draconian reptilians? Oh, I know what's going on now, you bloodsuckers. I've been studying about you guys for quite some time.
And don't think that we haven't done the same with you, Bedell 1014. I'll make this easy for you. Just give me the bag. Toss it over.
In this case, Bedell realized that there is no reason to trade a life for a book that he has no knowledge of. He slowly removed his backpack from off his shoulder. He began to regret that he didn't leave the book with Makita back at her place. Bedell felt that they would take his life immediately after they received the book, making it very difficult in such a matter.
Toss the bag now.
Bedell threw the bag about so far and took a step back.
Now turn around, 1014. You, go and get the bag.
McCord ordered one of the agents that was closer to the bag to retrieve it right away, then looked back over at Bedell.
Turn around.
Bedell slowly turned his back towards the agents, with his hands raised near his chest. But in doing so, he found himself cutting his eyes towards the ceiling after seeing some movements from above. The agent walked over to the book bag, reaches down for the handle. Just before he was able to pull the bag closer towards him, a dark shadow with a sharp sword attached to it plundered from an open hole within the ceiling, locking the bag in place. As he tries to pull for it, everyone was startled and became more surprised when an old man dropped down and landed in a low stance position as one of his legs extended out for balance as he grips the sword in his hand, locking the placement of the bag. He cuts his eyes towards Bedell's direction, making sure that he was unharmed.
Malachi Z. York, nice for you to join us.
His eye flicked it over to the agents and their guns as he lifts the sword up into the air, tossing the bag to the back so that Bedell can retrieve it. Bedell quickly grabs it out of midair. Malachi rose to his feet and double-timed it towards the agents. Only two out of the six stood back for backup. Malachi went through the agents with his sword, chopping. Automatics flew into the air as he punched and chopped his way through. Malachi continued swinging, taking out all agents by the numbers. But one out of the four that was fighting was able to get shots off. Malachi angled his sword so all six shots can bounce off of the steel sword. Then the agent threw his gun down and balled his fists up.
Come on.
The agent ran to Malachi with a blow that led him nowhere as Malachi blocked and twisted his arm and directed his fists towards his face, causing his face to go numb. The agent was shocked. Malachi turned with a chi to the body, a blow. Then he jumped with a strong energy from his sword, readjusting it by holding it like a bat, coming down with all his might. Then Malachi looked over towards McCord with a terrifying look in his eyes. Five more agents came running from the background and began shooting.
We're going to have to leave and fast,
Malachi thought to himself.
What are you guys doing? Get the damn book.
McCord started to become very impatient. He felt that he needed more agents when he realized his men were getting defeated.
Do you know how much you all just cost me?
The four drones start shooting Malachi back into the corner where Bedell was standing. Malachi looked over at Bedell as he continued to shield him from the shooting.
Give me the book.
Bedell unzipping the bag and took the book out and handed it over to Malachi.
When I say Maccabiah, I would need you to grab hold onto my hand. And whatever you do, don't let go.
Okay.
Malachi moved a good arm reach to Bedell. He began to speak out loud with a deep voice as his eyes began to glow.
Emo Wa Subi Nu.
A series of illuminated flare lights flickered when Malachi uttered the enchanted words. He glanced over at Bedell. He grabbed his hand and together they spoke out loud the completed chant by saying,
Nakavia.
The book opened up and released orb of an electrical energy that surrounded them both. McCord noticed the two agents on the far side. He rushes over and grabs one of their guns from one of them. He starts shooting alone with the four drones.
Take him down, now!
The agents near McCord stood by looking confused. McCord hits the orb of light but was unable to penetrate the spear. Then all of a sudden a white flash bursts throughout the room. Among the agents, McCord shielded his eyes using his arms. When McCord adjusted his eyes, he noticed that Bedell and Malachi were nowhere to be found.
No, this can't be happening.
McCord firmed his grip onto his gun and looked over to the two agents.
Where am I?
As he looked around, he noticed an unfamiliar place. An enchanting world with a source of some type of spiritual protection that governed the land. Floating mountains that filled the parks. From the top of the mountains to the bottom, it was extremely gorgeous. There was no ending to its beauty. When he turned to Malachi in attempts to find answers, he tried to be discreet, mentally preparing his thoughts to confront him. Bedell looked on to spot that Malachi was sitting on an old, decrepit stone in the far distance. But Malachi was not quite the same as viewed before. This time he had hair on his head. Also, he was wearing a short, dark beard lining his facial with a hint of gray. He sat there holding his sword in one hand and the book in the other. The book was open with abstract writings from an ancient alien text script that only Malachi and beings within a higher order can differentiate.
Who are you? I keep seeing you in my dreams, but it's like I'm unable to talk or make any movements. You tell me, what's that all about? What do you want from me? And what's up with this book that everybody wants so badly? You can't keep this a secret any longer. Plus, why did you even give it to me?
Bedell turned in a 360 as he spread his arms outward.
Look at this place. Just look at it. Who are you?
Malachi raised his head slowly, then looked over to the book.
Knowing is power, which is why I'm here. It is my job to open the door to such power and for you to walk through. I'm known throughout the mystical schools as many names. On your planet, I have devoted my visit to resurrecting the mental dead, which I refer to as mummies. Never did I know that the evil one would have done such of a great job with the people on your planet.
Are you telling me that you're an Anunnaki? I read about you guys all the time.
Yes, all of it. You are a great teacher, my son, which is why I need you to carry out what I'm here to give you.
But why me?
That is a question you must ask yourself. You have chosen your own path. Now it's time to grandstand your reasonings and why that path has been chosen.
Interesting. I guess you can say I like to solve problems, and if I can help, I'll be there. That's me. By the way, they called you Malachi back there. Are you?
Yeah, Malachi Zodok.
Bedell paused in thoughts and looked around.
The book, it is called
Makavia.
After the universe came to be, we as the Zodoks forged the remnants of the 999 plus one element singularity into elemental pages to tell your story. We hurtled them across the universe, so all of the answers you're looking for are there. Befitting its name, the Makavia held dominion over the fabric of space, being able to teleport its users anywhere in the universe. Each of the Tri-Ninth was eventually housed together as cubic containments, but then we turned them inside out, shaping the contour into pages, and that extra one element bonded them together, which came to be what you see here within my hand.
Are you telling me that you're holding the universe in your hand?
It is much more than that, but yes, I am.
Bedell shakes his head and puts his hands on top.
Okay, Bedell, you asked for this. I'm in. Tell me more.
As you know, we are at war with the Draconians, and they are not letting up. They want the book so that they can be able to control the entire universe, planets after planets. And we are not going to allow this to happen. If by any chance that they ever get their hands on this book and find a way to decode it, the game will end and we will lose. And I have never lost a battle before. So, it is up to you and other like-minded ones to come together. I will do all I can from afar, but overall, it was not my time then, but I can see now. It is time to give you the keys to open the book. I'm going to need you to stand still.
Malachi removed himself off of the stone in which he was sitting on and walked over to Bedell, placing his mid-three fingers upon his forehead. Creating a power source from his fingers, he began activating certain key tones that Bedell would need for reading the book when the time come. After the surge, Bedell was so confused.
I don't get it. I don't see how reading this book would be able to save my life or even others.
Remember, you do it all the time. It has gotten you this far. And realize that you have been opening mental portals for people to walk through with your teaching. Now, it's time to bring them home.
What keeps crossing my mind was when you took out a dozen or so of those reptilian agents with no problem. I heard about your legendary fighting skill, but seeing it in action, hey, that was incredible.
Once you're able to focus, certain elements won't matter anymore. Then you will be able to wake up. Wake up. Wake up.
Bedell was trapped within the confinement of his mind until he was unable to be free again. He focused on opening his eyes then realized he was on the floor, lying flat down from a blast that took place.
Wake up now! Run over. Get up!
He whispers to himself, looking back. Bedell noticed most of the agent's bodies were burned and stuck to the wall from the blast. He pushed himself off the floor, looking for any target of opportunity, but there was none. These guys meant business, and they're not going to let him get away so easily. From out of the flames and smoke, the agents realized that Bedell had nowhere else to run. He was pinned against the wall. He turned towards the agents with fear in his eyes.
What is this? Look, if I did something illegal, just arrest me. What the hell are you doing? What is this about?
Bedell felt in some way.
Why does this seem so familiar?
As he pondered,
why does this seem so familiar?
In silence, without making a word, what? Pointing their guns.
Why does this seem so Why does this seem so familiar?
I can't even leave you guys.
Why does this seem so familiar?
Before driving into some action.
McCart walks from between two agents that stood waiting for his next command.
1014, we finally meet.
Nah, we met before. You just don't remember. And go ahead, answer your call.
As Bedell started to remember the conversation with Malachi, he knew that he was unable to come to his aid.
The boss said to get the book and take him with us.
Bedell had no other choice but to submit, but he knew it wasn't over.
To be continued.
Is art imitating life, or is life imitating art?
This audiobook is breaking the spell and unlocking the truth about it all. Bedell 1014.
He's pinned against the wall.
Are you serious, B? Wow, that's crazy. Where are you now?
Will this creature be in the game?
Hey, wow, what a mess we have here. Let me introduce myself.
Bedell did not take any chance in looking back.
We all know they live among us. Watch your boy Bedell navigate through the Matrix as you experience a Brido Rice-based story, The Tome of Macabre.